one, especially in terms of the second season of Love and Hip Hop, but I just wanted to first sort of, for folks in the industry and other people are familiar with you, but can you just kind of talk about, I know that you're the president and co-founder, or you were the co-founder of Violator Management. Can you talk about what inspired you to sort of create or establish that business?
Well, I've been a violator for about 17 years of my career, and I started out on learning development, and then I moved into managing producers, and, you know, as I was moving around in the industry and meeting folks, Chris Lighty was one of the folks that I managed to do business with, and when he was moving over to Destin, I came in and we kind of built Violator from the ground up, Violator Management. It wasn't anything that I really set out to do. I guess I just saw a need in the marketplace. Rush Management was this thing. They had a bunch of accurate Tribe Called Quest. Bust around for me, also leaders of the news forum, directs that were in need of someone to help shape their careers and their team with flexibility. That's kind of led me into talent. And then over the course of the year, moved the company out, moved to other areas like branding and, you know, television and endorsement relations. And that was kind of the beginnings of Violator and the start of my career in the entertainment industry.
So what, and you were there for 17 years, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so what, and I'm sure you learned a lot of lessons. What was your biggest lesson, I guess, in terms of Violator?
I think one of the lessons that I definitely took away from that situation was, in life, you do not get what you deserve, you get what you negotiate. So just making sure that, you know, even when doing business with folks that you have a long-standing relationship with, that you always got your eyes on, make sure that the business side of things can, one, it that out of the equation that you can focus on, you know, the business of whatever it is you're doing, but two, just to make sure that at the end of the day you're never walking around or walking away from a situation feeling like you didn't get what you put into it. So I think that's probably one of the biggest lessons learned.
Okay, and so what, I guess, what prompted you to sort of depart and create Monami Entertainment?
I mean, there were so many things that I wanted, there were so many things I wanted to do, and I think, you know, at that point, Chris had other interests as well, you started Brand S Boom, and I wanted more to focus on film and television development, and I felt like I wanted to kind of go to the mindset, and then I went the urban music game and definitely, and when you kill every man for himself, your thought process that exists, that I wanted to move away from it, stage of my life. And so the name Monami is a play on my name, my French heritage, but it also means my friend, and it's, you know, kind of the spirit that I wanted to perfect into my career with, just really doing business in an environment that I enjoyed working. So many hours of my life were spent away from family, away from friends, really, you know, with the people that I work with, and I wanted to be surrounded by folks that were like-minded, that had, you know, same kind of philosophies about life, and just figure out a way for us all to, you know, get it, be successful, and make money together, but really in an environment that was positive and encouraging.
Okay. So I know that, it takes a certain skill set to be in this industry, especially being a woman. What do you think sets you apart from other people that have the same sort of skill set or have the same career or in the same lane? What sets Mona Scott Young apart from the other folk that are in the same sort of lane?
Well, there are tons of people who came into this, you know, having been in the business, having studied in college, having, you know, some kind of a connection. Like I said, I kind of came into it through a whole different trajectory. Definitely what sets me apart is I have a great sense of people. I understand, you know, what makes them tick. I understand how to connect with them and reach them and help pull up their best them and help their full potential. That's something that's like a God-given gift almost. And I was lucky enough to have an opportunity to apply it in an industry that I love as well, you know, my ability to manage talent and help them reach their full potential. I think that definitely is skill set. Yes, I'm very savvy at, you know, negotiating business deals, that's one of my skill sets as well. I'm a great communicator, and I think I have that. my ability to connect with people, and I think that that's, you know, an invaluable skill set when you're in, you know, a business that is based on people and their talent.
Okay. Now, in terms of talent, how do you select, or how do you sort of gauge, how do you have that, not how do you have eye, but what, how do you select talent to be interested in, to pursue, to form relationship with a business, that sort of thing?
Well, there's nothing, you know, something about the that moves me, you know, whether it's sitting across from a TV personality who's got that effect that makes me want to listen to what they have to say, or, you know, watching a producer or writer create a piece of music and seeing that process and feeling moved by, you know, the way they're expressing themselves with the music, you know, an artist on a stage performing. That'd be something that moves me internally. You know, all kinds of facts. I mean, there are tons of people who look great, who can sing, who can rap, who can, you know, do a number of things, but we can't manage them all. I mean, it's a very personal experience. I'm very passionate about it. So it's always about that thing that I don't know until it happens. You know, I very rarely remember being backstage and watching a major, you know, performance. Something about her just hurt my soul, you know, just the way she, you know, was so passionate about her delivery of her song. You know, I watched Missy in the studio and seeing her process, and something about that just always, you know, so it's really about my connection, my personal connection. It takes a lot out of me. You spend a lot of time with this person. You spend, you devote a lot of your resources and your energy to the pursuit of their goals. And so for me, there's got to be a very personal connection.
Okay. Who would you say, or if you'll say, has been, in terms of talent, is your most challenging sort of talent-client situation?
You know, Missy and Buzz are probably my most longstanding clients, and they're challenging in their own ways for different reasons. Buzz is amazing because he's very opinionated about what he wants, the way he wants things, and is very high-strung and passionate about the way he expresses that. So that's something that, you know, you just have to kind of temper yourself, because both of us yelling at the top of our lungs isn't going to get us anywhere. Missy is challenging in the fact that this is somebody who loves the creation of music. She became an artist almost, at, you know, incidentally, because that was a need to her and a producer and a talent developer. So the process of being an artist becomes challenging because this isn't something that she did because she wanted to do it. It was something that she did because, again, it provided her opportunity to develop her own talent. So when you have to do things like the promotions and the marketing, and I need you to do interviews, and I need you to do press, that's just something that she shies away from completely because it's not in her nature. That's not what she wants to be doing. She'd much rather be locked down in the studio making music. And so that becomes very, very challenging because, you know, I have to balance the two, cater to her sense of artistry, but also cater to the marketing and promotions that need to happen for that artistry to reach masses.
Well, in terms of the reality show second season of Love and Hip Hop, what made you want to, you know, enter into the reality TV world?
I think the reality TV world is a little hard to circumvent. You know, probably there's more reality programming conscripted now on network. But this was an opportunity that kind of came to me, and I saw that there was, you know, a chance for me to give voice to and give platform to women who, much like myself, operate behind the scenes in this business. They do it in a little bit of a different way in terms of their relationship, but I think that there were some similarities to that. A lot of times, the work, the commitment, the sacrifice that gets put into what people see in front of the camera, you know, never really gets a voice. And I got to know somebody looking through my work with their men, and they were smart and talented and, you know, opinionated and dynamic in their own right. And, you know, I also suffer with the downside of being in a relationship where you can invest all of that time and energy and book up 10 years of your life goes by, and you basically defer your own dreams and put them on hold, and sometimes have nothing to show for it. And, you know, the whole female ensemble cast genre was gaining popularity, and we started it out as a show that Jim Jones, which morphed when we got the pilot to include his girlfriend and mother, who were dynamic characters. So just to stay in vain with what was happening in television, you know, I talked to the network about using hip hop as a backdrop, is that the world that people are fascinated with, it's, you know, it is pop culture, that's pop culture right now, and a lot of people don't get the chance to put those on the screen by the laws and ways. So maybe there was an opportunity here to pull back a little bit and show this other side of their lives, the women in their lives, you know, the relationships that they have and how that impacts what they do in front of the camera. So, you know, we put together what I thought was a great cast of women and did very well our first season, and I was very proud of the fact that I think that the show scratched beneath the surface in a way that seeing at that point in reality TV with these kinds of shows. I think, you know, people were more focused on the sensationalism and the drama and all the arguments, but it didn't take the time to allow you to get to know the women in a way that you cared about them, or you cared about what they were arguing about before they started throwing water at each other. You know, so we tried to dig a little deeper, and I think that we were successful at this. So. With all of the requisite drama that you need in reality television, I'm very proud of the show that we made and the opportunity that I was able to present to these women.
How did you select other cast members outside of the connection between Jim Jones and Christy? How did you select the other ones?
Some of them were just relationships, like, you know, Luke Yatton and Violated Games. Emily, you know her through, you know, Fab and being in the industry. But there was a long interview process of just trying to talk to different women. You know, they've got different motivations for being on the show. There were people who we talked to who just wanted to be on TV. Were women didn't have a great story to tell and weren't motivated by anything other than the need for fame. And that was what I was looking for in retrospect. You know, it's probably what makes it a lot easier on some of these other shows. When you just have a bunch of people who just aren't ready to go for it because they want to be on television. These women, you know, it was really about talking to them, just opening up their lives and allowing themselves to be vulnerable and be truthful and honest about who they were and them understanding that, you know, there were other women out there, other girls out there who might have a different view of, you know, what they thought their lives were. Maybe by sharing the reality of their lives, pardon the pun, you know, we might put something else. And so I commend them every step of the way, but it was not an easy process. And I don't even know if it's something I could do. It just sit there and put all my shit out there in that way. But they were great about it. They allowed themselves to cry openly, laugh openly, you know, show their insecurities and their weaknesses. And I think that's what made the show different and set apart.
So, okay, and in that same sort of vein, is that what you think sets Love & Hip Hop apart from the other reality shows that are out there?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I hear all the talk from women is like, you know, you guys have trouble. What I love about it is I feel like I got to know these girls. I work with them. I love, you know, they empathize with them because they see themselves in them. You know, sometimes you watch these shows and you watch these women and it's like, wow, this is great television, but shit. You know, why are these people? Where do they find these people? You know what I'm saying? Because they don't look or act anybody that you know in your real life, right? And it was like, you know, I understood why she went off. I understood why she was gone. I see why. Because, again, it's about them opening themselves up and letting the audience get to know them. And that's certainly something that, you know, we were very, very diligent about. I think it's definitely what sets us apart. It's what gives us feeling.
Now, how involved are the show?
Girl, soup to nuts, live, eat, breathe, shit. Everything from, you know, casting, day, you know, dialogue, and I call it kind of, what would I say? That I wanted to catch space management, you know what I'm saying? Because we're asking these people to lay their skulls, you know, to rip their hearts open every day and lay it out on the table for everyone to pick at and scrutinize. And so the relationship management with the talent, the creation of, you know, the show itself, the follow up, the storyline, all of this stuff is not exactly happening. All we do is we take the, you know, the highs and the lows and we magnify that because nobody has the time to watch everything in between. You know, figuring out how do we take this thing that's very heavily involved from, you know, concept to execution.
How do you balance part of it that's semi-staged for TV and the other part that's real? How do you sort of balance that fine line so that the viewer gets that experience but not making it too staged or if it's staged at all?
Yeah, no, well, there isn't much staging. When you say staging, the only thing that is staged is the setting, the environment that things take up. Like somebody called me at night and said, you know, I was thinking about what she said to me today, and I really want to address that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not, that shit didn't sit back with me. So then I say, okay, let's go to dinner, let's go have drinks, let's go, you know what I'm saying? That's about as staged as it gets. I don't go to them and say, hey, I think this is what you should be thinking or feeling or doing in any given situation. None of it is scripted. These are all their words. These are all what they're thinking and feeling. Again, my job is just to follow the reality, follow the story. A lot of times it's stuff that they don't want to follow. It's like, nah, I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to be knowing. I don't want to hear like this or any of that. That's where the challenge comes in because, you know, my job is to have a story that's cohesive, that the audience can follow, that makes sense. And I can't have you decide you want to leave a chunk of it out because they're uncomfortable. You know, so that's kind of the headspace management process I was talking about earlier, that it's like getting them to the point where they're comfortable enough and willing to go there. But again, you know, I give it all to the cast because this is their lives that they open up to the world and shit. I don't know, I can feel that.
Right. So how do you answer, you know, folks that say this about other reality shows, that this show is contributing negatively to like the portrayal of women of color or women? How do you sort of answer that statement or that criticism?
I don't know so much that I feel the need to answer it because I think as women we're incredibly diverse, you know, we're well-rounded, we're different, we disagree, we're opinionated, we have, you know, again, highs and lows to our everyday lives. It just so happens that we're capturing those for the purposes of a television show. There are days when I can get very ugly. You know, would I want a camera capturing that? Absolutely not. But it doesn't define who I am in totality, and it doesn't, you know, speak to who I am every day. And so I think that there are some, as long as the cast is being true to who they really are, what we are providing, again, is the forum for exposure. So I always say to the ladies, you guys have ultimate editing power because I can't put out anything you haven't put in. And, you know, when you talk about, you know, the portrayal, in my case, in my instance, these are accurate portrayals of the women who happen to be on this cast. I can't speak to what they do on other shows and how they vote on the cast members to do things that might take them out of their character or that might, you know, have them act in a manner that they wouldn't normally. You know, and that's why it's always important for people to see the totality of the situation as opposed to I'm just going to have them fight every single episode. And that's all about. No, if a fight is the end result, or an argument or a disagreement is the end result of a situation that is perfectly plausible and understandable because you understand who these characters are and you see why they react in a certain way, then that's the reality of what it is. Again, we all have moments that we're not bothered. Our moments aren't captured on them cameras because we're not doing a reality show. Their moments are.
Okay. And so this is season two. What, and, you know, obviously you don't want to share, you don't have to, but what do you have in mind in terms of a long-term sort of plan for the show? Or, you know, on season two, do you make a plan to expand it to another city? Or do you have
Help up your sleeve? Well, absolutely. We've been looking at other cities. I'd love to see some of my cast members expand and branch off and to spin off. You know, Jim and Chrissy are amazing. I think, you know, their relationship speaks to so many young couples out there that come from this hip hop generation and that are, you know, finding their new way to be the Cosby family. You know what I'm saying? We all have different definitions of what, you know, what family is. And I think that there are so many people who can relate to their family dynamic, so I'd love to see a spinoff with those two. But I also am looking at other cities, I'm looking at other ladies, looking at other worlds as well, to explore the backdrop. The Love and Hip Hop franchise is a great one, and I want to continue developing it, but but I also have other shows that aren't developing that aren't in this genre. So, you know,
okay,
that's kind of the bigger picture plan.
Okay. Is there anything else that you'd be willing to share in terms of what you have going on outside of Love & Hip Hop in terms of business?
Well, you know, I've got my Miss Failure project that's definitely slated for the top of next year. I'm extremely excited about that. It's been a long time coming, but she's finally, you know, in a place where she can feel she's ready, which has been, you know, the biggest turn at different points of time. The label felt that it was time to go. She never felt ready. She now does. So I'm excited about that. I have a young female artist named Destiny out of Florida that I'm developing with Jerry Wonder by themselves, so that's an exciting project for me. And just, you know, other film and TV stuff that, you know, we're looking at for 2012.
Okay. And, you know, I was asked this earlier, and I always ask, you know, women, successful women, how do you sort of balance the career and family situation?
Right. I mean, that's a constant struggle. I always say that as much as I'd like that I've mastered it at this point. It's, you know, it's difficult because, you know, that there are life-defining moments that you are missing that you will never get back, you know. I'm very lucky that I have a very strong family unit. My husband holds down the fort completely, so that takes a lot of the pressure off of me. It's just making the best of the time that we do have together, you know, just really stopping down when it's time to stop down. Sometimes it's difficult, especially when I'm in production, to decide that I'm not going to answer the phone after a certain time or on the weekends and stuff when we're out. But, you know, it's a constant open dialogue. This is kind of life that we're in. My family understands it, but it's also on me to make sure that I take the time to, you know, balance it out as much as I can and spend the quality time with them. But it's a struggle. It's a constant struggle.
Okay. And with that saying, it's sort of vain. You and a lot of celebs and fans experience a lot of tragedy. Is there anything that you think we can sort of learn from his legacy or his life?
It's been especially, you know, difficult for me because in recent months we connected and he was so excited about all of the things that he had coming up and really wanted to take advantage of, you know, the momentum that would be created in his career to just kind of get back on the saddle in the music space. He still continued to do it. He felt something really wanted to bring back into the music space. He seemed so poignant that he had an opportunity to perform at the BET Awards, right, you know, before passing. So what that did to me was, wow, nothing is promised. We've heard that saying, you know, probably treated it as a cliche, but you have absolutely got to make every single day count. I remember, you know, when I first got word, all I knew about was, when he got up this morning, you know, did he go? Is there something that tells you that this is it, this is the last day? Was it to the source? Probably not. Probably not. And so I started thinking, like, today, for all I know, could be it. You know? And did I absolutely maximize today? Did I do everything that I could possibly do to make today my last day? You know, the most fruitful that it could possibly be. And so that's something else that I'm trying to adopt now, you know, post-Emmy, because I just remember all the excitement he had for life. And where he was going at this stage in his life, and to have it cut short so unexpectedly, it's definitely put, you know, that perspective for me.
Well, with that in mind, and this is my last question for you, what do you want your legacy to be?
Just that I lived every day like it was the last day, that I fulfilled every expectation that I had for myself, that I loved as hard as I could, that I, you know, lived as the best life that I could possibly live. It's about accomplishing any one specific goal, but it's just about every single moment, you know, being maximized, because I'm sitting here talking to you and answering these questions, am I saying everything that I absolutely want in this interview? So that when I hang up the phone, I don't want to go and choose, you know, or the head race. Just really try to maximize every single moment.
Okay. Well, it has been an absolute pleasure. You're speaking so, and I'm sure you like it. Very thoughtful with, you know, what you say, and I appreciate the time.
Oh, opportunity, I just, again, just want to be able to, you know, say what I have to say while I have the chance to say it, girl. You know, the
right.
It really just struck hard. I didn't expect you to go there, so we just, you know.
I'm sorry. You know.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's fine. Not at all.
It's such a, I know it's touchy, but I know that, you know, I kept your time out, and I know that you had a friendship with him, and I know that everyone, even that didn't know him, seemed to be very bothered by it. So.
Because if he had, you know, laid low and just kind of was, you know, living life day by day, existing, this was somebody who was taking life by the whole horns and was riding it out to the end, you know, and was excited and it was infectious. And when you were around him, you felt like, let's go, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And just to have that come to an abrupt stop, you know what happens when you're galloping on a horse and he just stops?
Right.
You go tumbling head first. And I think that that's what we're all feeling.